Center is Shahid Hafid, and he is a program evaluation manager at the Virginia Department of Health, and he'll be talking to us about the practice of medication therapy management across Virginia's pharmacies.
Good afternoon, everyone. So, again, my name is Shahid Hafid, and I'm from Virginia. Work at the Virginia Department of Health, and today the title of my presentation is The Practice of Medication Therapy Management Across Virginia's Pharmacies. So my presentation today basically is about a survey that we conducted this year to assess the practice of medication therapy management and patient self-management conducted by community pharmacists to help patients manage their chronic condition. So specifically, we were looking into if community pharmacists in Virginia were providing MTM or PSM, patient self-management, for high blood pressure and diabetes. So we did a survey and we collected responses, and I'm going to share a little bit about the process that we went through to develop that survey and to launch that survey and share with you some of the findings. The purpose of conducting the survey of the community pharmacists in Virginia, number one, so we have some performance measures that are due for the 1305, which is the state of public health actions to prevent and control chronic disease, something like that. And then we also have the 1422, which is the state and local public health actions to prevent and control chronic disease. So that was like the number one driving reason for why we did the survey. But also we wanted to use the findings from the survey to help inform and strengthen the implementation of activities and strategies to try and increase the number of community pharmacists in Virginia who are providing medication therapy management and promoting patient self-management. And also we wanted to contribute to the knowledge base of what is already known about MTM and PSM through targeted dissemination of the results and writing some peer-reviewed papers. So a little bit about hypertension and diabetes. I think everyone pretty much knows that these two chronic conditions are burdensome to the United States population, people living in the United States, and very costly. So one in three Americans, adult Americans, has high blood pressure, and only about half of those people have it under control. And high blood pressure alone accounts for about $46 billion in healthcare costs. And diabetes, about 22 million people, or adults, I should say, had diabetes in 2014. And that was up from 5.5 million people in 1980. And diabetes alone accounts for $245 billion in direct and indirect costs to the economy. And direct and indirect, so direct would be like a medical bill. So these are healthcare costs. And indirect would be someone not going to work or something like that. So those are indirect costs, missing their job because they're sick. This diagram is a schematic of what medication therapy management consists of. There are several activities that a pharmacist can provide under medication therapy management. I think chief among them involves the medication therapy review, where a pharmacist will review the patient's medication regimen and assess whether or not there needs to be some changes. If there are, if the medicines that the patient is prescribed are properly prescribed, or if there are some contraindications, or maybe the patient was prescribed a medicine in error. So that would be the chief activity that the pharmacist did, was review all the medicines and make sure that there are no contraindications, or make some necessary adjustments. Documentation and follow-up, following up with the patient to see how the medicines are working. Generating a personal medication record, or interventions and referrals. So the pharmacist could refer the patient out for some lifestyle change programs to try and improve their health outcomes through perhaps going to an exercise class or a diet class. And establishing a medication reminder system. This can be in the form of like emails or text messages that go to the patient weekly or daily to take their medication, and a personalized medication action plan, which will help the patient stay on track and take the medicines when they need to, exercise, and ultimately help them improve their outcomes. In short, medication therapy management is the delivery of medical care by a pharmacist with the goal of improving drug therapy and helping the patient reach their clinical outcomes for high blood pressure and diabetes and other chronic diseases. Patient self-management is very similar to medication therapy management, but it's patient-focused or patient-centered. So it's patient self-management is the systematic provision of education and supportive interventions by healthcare staff to increase patient skill and confidence in managing their own health problems. Benefits of MTM and PSM, basically it's very cost effective and there's a high return on investment because the time that it would take a pharmacist to, you know, speak with a patient coming into the pharmacy is very minimal in terms of, or compared to the costs, the direct and indirect costs associated with adverse impact of the diabetes and the hypertension. And also, the MTM and PSM help improve cardiovascular indicators. So these are like the main benefits of MTM and PSM. So we launched a survey. We did a survey earlier this year. We had worked with our Department of Health Professions in Virginia to obtain a list of all currently licensed pharmacists in Virginia. This was in 2015. We got a list of about 13,000 pharmacists, currently licensed pharmacists, and what this consisted of, we were just given their email addresses, their personal email addresses. We learned from the Board of Pharmacy, which is under the Department of Health Professions. They have a unit called the Healthcare Workforce Data Center, and they conduct a survey every year of all health professionals, pharmacists included, and they ask them some questions. We learned that through that survey that they did, that there are about 3,500 community pharmacists in Virginia. And we were specifically targeting those 3,500 community pharmacists to learn about the practice of MTM and PSM. So we developed and tested our survey. And I should say that we had done a survey of community pharmacists back in 2013, and we drastically improved upon that survey. We had about 76 responses back in 2013. We had launched the survey through the Virginia Pharmacists Association's newsletter, so we got some responses based off of that. So we developed the survey this time around and improved upon it. We had folks at the Department of Health Professions Board of Pharmacy take a look at our survey. We had our partners at the Virginia Pharmacists Association take a look at our survey, make sure that we're asking the right questions. And then we also ran a copy of the survey by some community pharmacists, just random community pharmacists in the community, to make sure that we were asking the right questions and that our survey tool wasn't too long. So we tested it. We had about 21 questions on our survey tool. It was electronic, and we used Survey Gizmo, which is similar to SurveyMonkey. We launched the survey March 1st of 2016 and left it open for about 3 weeks. It closed on March 25th, 2016, and we sent out two reminders. Now, I should say one point about our methodology. We had intended to launch the survey in 2015, but we weren't able to because of several reasons. One of them, and I'll explain it a little bit later on, but it took us some time to make sure that we were asking the right questions, and we wanted to make sure we worked with our partners, the Department of Health Professions, the Board of Health, and the Virginia Pharmacists Association. So that took us a little bit of time. Inclusion criteria for someone to be counted in our survey, one of the questions we had, first questions was, are you a community pharmacist? And we asked the pharmacist to look at this definition, community pharmacist, you know, the pharmacist working in the community setting. So they answered yes or no. And if they answered yes, then they took the survey. If they responded no, they were disqualified and said thank you for your time. So that was one inclusion criteria. The other one was that they needed to be practicing in Virginia during the time that the survey launched. We obtained IRB exemption. We were not obtaining or collecting any identifiable information from the pharmacist, nor were we collecting any patient information. So it was basically exempt from IRB. And we analyzed the results in Tableau 9.0. Out of the 3,500 community pharmacists, we received 518 responses in those 3 weeks that it was open. So now I'm going to share with you some of the results. And we had a whole lot of data, and we pretty much just took a preliminary look at the data right now, but we do have plans to do more in-depth analysis of the results, looking into things like the distribution between, rural versus urban, looking at the responses on how they compared, whether or not the pharmacists worked in a rural setting or an urban setting, and a lot of other questions that we want to take a look into. But I'm going to share with you some of the findings that we collected. So one of the first questions that we asked was, what type of setting does the pharmacist practice in, the community pharmacist? And you can see by the blue bar, we had 188 respondents state that they work in chain drugstores, like Walgreens or Rite Aid. And we had 121 who reported that they work in independent pharmacies, and 88 who worked in supermarket-type pharmacies like a Kroger or a Giant. We had a question, we had a couple of questions on there about when they practiced MTM or PSM. So we asked, did you practice MTM or PSM prior to 2015? And we had another question asking, do you currently practice MTM or PSM? So you can see the change. It increased. So pharmacists who practice PSM and MTM prior to 2015 and currently increased slightly. I mentioned that we had planned to launch this in 2015, but because we were delayed in getting our survey tool developed and IRB exemption, we actually launched it in 2016. But I still think it's a good understanding of the change in the practice of MTM and PSM in terms of the number of community pharmacists who are providing these services. The types of activities that are performed under MTM, so medication management review, we had 302 pharmacists who are doing that activity. It's pretty much well distributed across the types of activities that you can do under MTM. Documentation and follow-up, 240, personal medication record. Patients stated that I read another article that basically said that patients found a great benefit in having a personal medication record that they could take with them to their doctor, because a lot of the times when they go for their follow-up doctor appointments, they forget the list of medications that they're taking. So having a personal medication record that the pharmacist provide them is something that they saw great value in. Different types of PSM, patient self-management, that community pharmacists promote. The leading type was providing patients education, risk screening, and brief interventions, and also establishing and utilizing medication refill reminder systems. So we asked about barriers and challenges to providing MTM and PSM. The barriers were asked of community pharmacists who responded that they did not provide MTM or PSM. So we wanted to understand from both groups of pharmacists. Chief barrier was that pharmacists stated they didn't have adequate time, and staffing levels were a challenge for the pharmacists that did not provide MTM and PSM, and inadequate space in the pharmacy and training. All of these, we asked for the top five, so these are the top five here. The challenges we asked of the pharmacists who did report that they provided MTM and PSM, but we still wanted to understand what challenges they faced in providing those services. They were pretty much similar. So we learned that the pharmacists that provide MTM and PSM, they felt that patients weren't interested in PSM and MTM, and that staffing was a challenge. They also reported that they felt that they didn't have enough collaboration with the physician because sometimes the pharmacist can make adjustments to the patient's medication without the intervention or without calling or checking with the physician. But in many times they have to collaborate. They have to call the physician and, you know, check whether or not they can make that change. So that was one of the challenges. And then lack of insurance companies paying for these services. We asked pharmacists whether or not they felt PSM was their responsibility as a community pharmacist. And the vast majority of the respondents felt that it was a pharmacist's responsibility to provide MTM and PSM. We also asked community pharmacists whether or not they felt MTM and PSM help improve the quality of care provided to the patients and help patients meet their outcomes related to high blood pressure and diabetes, and the vast majority felt that MTM and PSM did help increase the quality of healthcare and the patient outcomes. One last question that I'm presenting today is, you know, how did the community pharmacists identify patients for MTM and PSM? So a lot of the community pharmacists reported that they identified patients if they were referred by their health plan or the pharmacy benefit manager, or those patients having a specific chronic disease or diseases, or patients with a history of non-compliance, and patients taking certain medications, or patients having a specific health plan which paid for those services. So, conclusions. We saw that there was an increasing number of community pharmacists providing MTM and PSM prior to 2015 and currently in 2016, which is a good thing. Most community pharmacists providing MTM and PSM operated at chain drugstores and independent pharmacies in Virginia. Community pharmacists view MTM and PSM as their responsibility, and they perceive MTM and PSM to increase the quality of care and helping patients meet their outcomes. More conclusions. More respondents reported providing MTM compared to PSM. So more community pharmacists were providing MTM. They also reported they felt they had inadequate training and that insurance coverage was low, and that they didn't have time and lacked collaborative relationships with physicians. And also we saw that there were some overlap between the barriers and challenges, so staffing and space and patient interests. Program implications in Virginia, and I think in general, at least in Virginia, we would have to think about engaging more pharmacies as a strategy for increasing the number of community pharmacists that provide MTM. So, for instance, independent supermarkets and mass merchandisers, and promoting PSM. So, we saw that PSM promotion was lower than MTM promotion. So, working to increase the number of community pharmacists that actually provide PSM as a strategy. And working to develop and promote policy and system changes that would require, maybe at the state level, that a community pharmacist who provides MTM actually offers PSM as well. So offer them together as one strategy. One way that we plan to work to increase the number of community pharmacists providing these services is to partner with schools of pharmacy in Virginia. So we're already talking to 3 schools of pharmacy to get some PharmD students and place them in areas that have lower proportions of community pharmacists and have that be like an internship for the PharmD student. So we're gonna work with those 3 schools of pharmacy on that. More programmatic implications. So this data gives us a great idea of what's going on in Virginia regarding MTM and PSM, and will help us strengthen our programmatic implementation of 1305 and 1422 strategies to increase the provision of these services. And also will help us contribute to the knowledge base of public health practice around MTM and PSM. I'd like to acknowledge some of my partners who worked with me and really made this study possible. And questions?
Hello, Dennis McDermott from Washington State. One thing that seemed fairly bold there was one of the main barriers was lack of patient interest. And I was wondering, are you doing any outreach to kind of communicate the message that, yes, the pharmacist is, this is legitimate, that I can sort of envision that a lot of patients maybe view the pharmacist as just a merchant, this is where you go to buy drugs. You're not my doctor. What are you doing trying to give me medical advice? Do you have any outreach to the patients to in this regard?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we've just finished preliminary analysis of the results, and I'm working with our program folks because I'm in a support unit, so I'm taking these survey findings and really trying to give timely findings to the program folks so that they can use it to strengthen the implementation. It's interesting that you point that out because I read an article that was about a survey from the patient perspective. They interviewed some patients and asked them about their thoughts about MTM and the pharmacist's role in providing MTM. And patients felt like pharmacists wasn't always the best person to provide that service. They felt that being in the pharmacy and there's a long line, they felt like they didn't have time to actually talk to the pharmacist, or they felt kind of shy to talk in front of other people at the pharmacy window. So there were some perceptions from the patient perspective that I think there's probably a gap between the patient's understanding of the pharmacist's role as being a qualified part of the team-based care and the pharmacist's role in thinking that the patients are just not interested. So we are going to be talking to our program folks and thinking about strategies that we can get across that impasse, because obviously pharmacists can provide that service, but the patients may not be thinking it. And I think that's why, the pharmacists think that there's a lack of interest on the patient's part, but the patient is thinking, the pharmacist is not the person. And, additionally, I was reading where it says that a patient felt like if a pharmacist questioned the doctor's prescription, that the patient wasn't necessarily going to listen to what the pharmacist said. They were going to listen to what the doctor said. So, how do you get around that type of thing?
Even though the pharmacist is the only person in the chain who knows all of the medications they're taking.
It's my impression pharmacists are being managed very aggressively, and they have like quotas for how many prescriptions an hour you can fill. And it's almost like if you're not compensating them for the time to do counseling like this, to me it's a goodwill gesture more than anything. If they have time, they do it. If they don't have time, depending on what mood they're in or whatever, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a great point. And so we'd like to do a further analysis. As I mentioned earlier, we want to take a look to see if there was any difference between community pharmacists in the urban setting or the rural setting in terms of the number of prescriptions and the foot traffic that a particular pharmacy gets in an urban setting. Maybe there's more people in an urban setting where that would be more challenging for the pharmacy in the urban setting to provide MTM versus one in a rural setting. And a lot of patients in rural settings, they might rely more on like mail order prescriptions. That's a very important thing to be cognizant of is the time. I did see a lot of qualitative responses on the survey where pharmacists were basically saying, we don't have time. Yeah, it would be nice. It does have a lot of benefits, but we don't have time.
Yep. So, yep. I mean, I think probably a lot of pharmacists are just filling as many prescriptions as they can as quickly as possible and hoping and praying that they're getting them filled correctly. Mm-hmm. And if they do that, they're going to get full compensation. And there's no discrete, even we had to do that with physicians to give them time for doing some preventative counseling or something and allow them to figure out a billing mechanism so that they could spend more time doing that kind of thing. The more people we have promoting good health practices, the better. So it's a great idea, and you like it when pharmacists are part of that team that, is looking around for drug interactions or maybe a more optimal drug that they might suggest back to the physician or the patient or whatever. You always love that kind of stuff, and it creates a tipping point. But I always thought public health ought to be targeting barbers and cosmetologists and getting them persuaded about the importance of health and prevention, because they have probably almost everybody once a month for whatever, you know, 15 to 30 to whatever, how many minutes,
they
where...
trust and they have their personal connection.
Thanks.
And along with Tom's question, how long does a counseling session take?
You know, that's a great question. I'm not sure. I don't imagine that it takes long, but I'm not sure. I don't have an answer for you.
It's just because it seems like there's a difference between 3 minutes or 5 minutes or 20 minutes, you know?
Yeah.
And then for, I mean, it seemed like also that some pharmacists responded that they could bill for it, that insurance would cover that counseling. How much, any idea of how much they get reimbursed for that?
I don't have an idea. No, that's a great question as well. One thing on the amount of time, so you can do one component of MTM. You don't have to do all that were there. So even if you did one, we gave credit for providing MTM or PSM. So I think the amount of services that you provided under MTM would impact the amount of time that it took. But if you maybe just reviewed their medication regimen and left that alone, maybe it wouldn't take more than 5 to 10 minutes. Yeah. If you developed a plan, that might take longer.
I think I'm just like off the top of my head when I'm thinking of the setup of a pharmacy or whatnot, because I think they have privacy component. Because I know there are times that I've asked, you know, my pharmacist, like, why is this? But I almost wonder, like, maybe they even the structure of how it's set up. So, like, how you have, like, your waiting area, like, if you have a personal question, like, maybe the window needs to be further there. But I know that some pharmacies are starting to implement, like, little rooms or whatnot where they take people in when they want to give flu shots or something. So I wonder if it could happen there or even in the midst of, like, administering something like that.
Maybe interesting too if it, if physicians can bill for this counseling.
Mm.
You think that physicians, that would be part of the clinical visit, that physicians are also strapped for time too. So if pharmacists can bill, why not clinicians bill? And then they have the billing codes. Then we get a claim we figure out.
You know, doctors' offices are hiring people now to do that, health coach counseling. You know, so the doc moves in and out and does what they need to do, and they turn somebody over to a, you know, usually a nurse, I think, but, you know, a real somebody who's doing a lot of what maybe the pharmacist would be doing, you know, and they're billing for that, you know.
Any other questions? Thanks.